You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to Board Gamers Anonymous, the podcast of board gamers in the insane fun we have at the table together. This is Chris.
And this is Anthony.
And this is episode 296, Board Game Geeks Top 100 of 2020, Part 2. We'd like to thank all of our Patreon backers for helping us bring you a brand new episode. Well, we thought we could do it in one shot. It was clearly too much. Here we are, Part 2, BGG's Top 100 of 2020.
It's a lot of games, you guys. It's hard to talk about 100 games in an hour. We were like keeping it quick too. It was like a minute, boom, 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 boom. But then you realize that 100 minutes is still like almost 2 hours. So that doesn't really work.
See, and I think one of the funny things is if you were ever had the opportunity to actually be on the recording of these things, especially early on, like if you go back when we did like 100 of anything or 50 of anything, it would be like 2 hour broadcast. It'd be like, let's keep it tight. Let's keep it lean. And then next thing you know, 20 minutes on one game. And you're like, we have another 49 games to do.
You remember, I will never forget this, but the very first time we did our full top 100 with all four of us, with Daniel and Drew, and then the software wasn't working. Yeah. And then we had to record it a second time. It was, we were on there for like 6 hours and it was a 2.5 hour episode.
Well, you forgot the most important point was after we realized that it stopped recording and we had to re-record it, the software, again, free, so I can't complain, but the software, we could only record in 10-minute segments.
Yeah, that was fun. And you would tell, you would just like jump in like, nope, it's off. Stop. Start over. It was like 20 of those segments. Like, oh my God.
Yeah, the only thing worse than actually recording that was editing that. So,
oh my God, I can't even imagine.
Poor guy, whoever had to do that, man, he must, you know, stay awake at night and just cry and just cry. 10 minutes, it's almost 10 minutes. So there is a lot of blood, sweat, and tears on each and every episode here. So after 7 years and close to 300 episodes just for this podcast, and we've done other ones, hopefully this is fun for you. I don't know what it is for us anymore, but it's still great to get this out to you. And again, that's how much you mean to us. So again, thank you all for listening. Thank you all for downloading. Thank you all for supporting us in any way you can. Share the podcast. Let people know we are having a good time and we just want more people in on the party. So Anthony, that is what we tend to go through when we do these podcasts. Obviously, there's a lot of other stuff that's going on with Board Gamers Anonymous, and in particular, BGA Live.
BGA Live. Yes, sir. We got a new episode going up this Wednesday. Once again, 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can catch us on BoardGameArena.com or Twitch.tv/BoardGameArena. We recommend the latter because if you go directly to Twitch, you can comment and participate and be among the people who answer our questions and engage and ask questions, answer questions, etc. This week, we're going to be playing Teotihuacan, And, well, we're not going to be playing it. Other people are going to be playing it. We're going to be talking about it. So make sure to join us. It's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to run through one of my favorite games of all time and just kind of give you a rundown of how it plays and how it runs on Board Game Arena and all the good stuff that comes with that this week.
Yeah, there's a lot of great stuff going on there. And it's something that if you haven't had a chance to check out yet, please jump over there. We're doing so much great stuff. And we really want you to participate with us, especially me. I'm running the chat. So if you ever want to chat with us on BGA, like you're listening to the podcast right now, there's your chance. And you actually can see us. We're live. The most introverted podcasters out there are on a Twitch stream. If for no other reason, visit for the car crash spectacle of it all.
Oh, way to sell it, man. Yeah. It's
hey, it's 2020. You got to lean in, man. You got to lean in.
I mean, on the 2020 adjusted scale, we are amazing. So,
I know. There's no reason that should work. And we're actually doing a good job. And that's not just my mom saying that. I mean, it is my mom saying that, but it's other people too. So come see yourself if we've actually pulled this off. And again, we wouldn't have been able to do this without all of you and your support. So please rally the troops, get over to BGA Live. So Anthony, so much going on there. Obviously, we want our people there, but also we want our people's opinion. What about BGA, Board Gamers Anonymous? Anything for our listeners to be doing this couple in coming week?
Yeah, I mean, real quick before we jump into that, we should mention that there is a second BGA Live on Thursday this week. So we are, if you're not aware, Essen starts on Thursday, Essen Live, Essen Digital, whatever they're calling it. And we are partnering up with Repos Productions and Board Game Arena, and we're going to be running a stream on the Board Game Arena Twitch channel on Thursday at 6 p.m. Eastern. So a couple hours earlier than our normal, but it's an extra day. So it's a second stream that we're running, and it's going to be a run through of the new Seven Wonders second edition that's up on Board Game Arena with the two co-founders of Repos Productions and a couple members of their team over there. So we're going to be playing the game. They're going to be playing the game as well. So we have six of us playing. We're going to be talking about the new game. We're going to be talking about Seven Wonders. We're going to be talking about Essen, anything you could think of. Make sure you hop over there, hop in the chat, let us know what you want us to ask them. It's going to be a lot of fun. So make sure you hop on and join us for a special production of BGA Live on Thursday.
Yeah, I'm really excited about this. Seven Wonders has always been one of my favorite games of all time. Definitely my top 100 way back when. And to have the opportunity to play the new version on Board Game Arena is tremendously fun. Not to mention with all the people from Repro Production, because these are the people that, you know, I just can't wait to see their games. I love Seven Wonders Duel. I love the expansions, and I have almost everything that came out through Seven Wonders. So yeah, definitely check it out. And again, this is a special, special episode. So not one of those after school episodes. This is actually fun.
I mean, you never know. Could become a special after school episode. We don't know where this is going to go, guys.
Yeah, so that's why we need your extra special help, especially in the chat for that episode. So if you love Seven Wonders, or maybe you've never played Seven Wonders before, this is a great time to get involved with the game, because especially at this point, everything's been rebalanced. There's some new features in the game. So you are not losing out on anything, but you're really getting in on the best time possible. The game's brand new and nice and shiny, some new artwork, and just a lot of fun.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, that is Thursday again, 6 p.m. Eastern. It's going to be midnight over there in Belgium for these guys. So,
wow.
Here's hoping they're like wired on 5-hour energy and caffeine and just loopy as heck, because we're going to have fun with them. So diving into what we're doing on our end, we mentioned last week that we have episode 300 coming up. In fact, we've mentioned that like every week for the last like 6 weeks. We are just 4 months away from episode 300 of Board Gamers Woo! Anonymous. For some reason, that feels like super big to me, like more it than does. 200, more than 250. Yeah. It's just such a big number.
I've thought about this a lot, and I don't know why it is. Maybe it's just the giant round numbers of things. It feels like if you hit 50 episodes, you did a thing, you can pack your stuff up and go home. If you do 100 episodes, the industry just gives you a nod, like, huh, okay, all right, we see you. You hit 150, nobody cares, because it's, you know, they gave you the nod. You're lucky if you ever get a nod. 200, all right, you could kind of sit at our table, but like not in the great seats. 250, all right, you're sticking around. Okay, you could actually sit with the adult table. But 300, I think 300 is really the new metric. I don't think there's many podcasts that have actually even reached that number, not to mention 7 years. But yeah, 300 for one podcast is pretty impressive.
Yeah, you could sit down and listen to our podcast every day for 30 minutes, and it would take you 2 years to get through all of it. Just think about that for a second. So
yeah, and one more thing about that too. One of the things about our podcast that Anthony and I really worked hard on that maybe you don't know is that we really tried to make each and every podcast evergreen. Maybe not everyone fits that mold, but most of them we try to make so that if you got a chance to play a game that maybe had been out for some time, or you want to revisit a classic, jump back. There are 300 available episodes on every podcast player, not to mention YouTube, not to mention BoardGamersAnonymous.com. And hopefully they will sound as fresh and as interesting as the day we did them.
Yeah, absolutely. So a big part of this, because we like to celebrate things, we like to give stuff away. That's like literally our favorite thing in the world, is to give people free stuff, which sounds silly, but you know, you guys give us support and help us out on Patreon and everything else, and then we just want to give it all back. Yeah. So typically when we do something like this, we run a contest. We're doing a contest again this year, and it is for our listeners' top 20 games of all time. We usually do this either the episode before or the episode after our top 100 update. This year, it'll be the episode after. So episode 301 will be our listeners' top 20 of all time. And to do that, we need you to tell us what your favorite games are. So if you head over to BoardGamersAnonymous.com, right there on the homepage or on the Facebook page, which should be pinned to the top, you will find the post for this. It's a contest. And all we need is your first and last name, your email address, and your list of top 20 games. If you provide 20 games in that note that you sent to us, you will be automatically entered into the contest. And what that means is at the end of this, when we pick a random winner, everybody who has done this will have an opportunity to win one of the games from the final list that I'm going to curate out of all these different entries. So couple little things. Obviously, the game has to be in print. It has to be something we can actually get to you. So it has to be available to you locally, wherever you are in the world. Like, there needs to be a local store that has it in stock that we can ship it from. And it can't cost like $200. But other than that, we will ship you whatever from that list. And yeah, it's a lot of fun. We do this every time and we get so many great entries. And our list changes. Like, people have different top 20s. And it's just fun for me to dig through these and build the master list out of it. So if you haven't yet, head over to BoardGamersAnonymous.com or our Facebook page, Facebook.com/BoardGamersAnonymous, and fill that out. And you will be in the contest and helping us build episode 301.
Yeah, we especially want you to get out there and represent, because a lot of times we're telling you about our favorite games, games that we like, games that we want to talk about. But really our most important list, and the list that we really care about most about, is your list. We really want to know what you love, what you love to hear about, what you love to play. And sometimes people are like, you know what? You gave it that review, but I really feel like it deserves higher. This is your chance. This is your chance to let your voice be known and everyone know how great those games are that you're able to get to the table each and every week.
Absolutely. Yeah. And like, I literally just put this up like 4 hours ago. We already have 20 entries. So get in there. Let us know.
Definitely.
The more we get, the better, honestly. Data. I want all the data. So just, yeah, looking forward to it.
I mean, seriously, we've been talking for 300 episodes about what we like. Come on.
You guys can look forward to 4 weeks of come on.
Hey, look, it's not a pledge drive. We're just asking to know what you like. We're not asking for money. We really appreciate your support, but you're never going to find people who care more about you and your board game collection and what you love to game than us. So come on. I'm sorry. I can't help it. It's the Italian me. See, you can't see the hands. if you watch the BGA live, you could see a lot more of the hand movement. So you just have to feel the hand movement when I say that.
I can see that. Yeah.
All right. So, Anthony, if people did want to do some really cool BGA hand movement as they go, come on, but they also wanted to look incredibly cool, how would they go about that?
Well, we have been talking forever about getting merch up on the site, and we finally did it. So we partnered up with TeePublic, which you've probably heard of if you've listened to any other podcasts on the planet. And we now have a store up linked on BoardGamersAnonymous.com. So if you go to the website and you click at the very top on the merch button, it will take you to our TeePublic store. Right now, we just have like some logos and some basic stuff up there, but obviously we're going to be adding more things. And you can buy t-shirts, hoodies, masks, because why not have our Anonymeeple on your face? Kids apparel, notebooks, mugs, pins, whatever. There's a million different things you can slap the logo on or any of the other designs that we're going to be putting up there. So make sure you head on over there, check it out. Let us know what you think. Let us know what else you might like there. If you have a cool idea, honestly, let us know. We would love to feature it on the store. But this is something we've been meaning to do for a long time, and it's exciting. We're happy to have it up. So we'll probably plug it for the next few weeks just to remind you that it's there. But in the meantime, you know, head on over there, check it out. Let us know what you think.
Absolutely. Again, thank you for your support. Thank you for promoting Board Games Anonymous. Every once in a while, we see you guys on Reddit or we see you on Facebook representing, and we really appreciate that. It means a lot. All right, Anthony. So that looks like it's about everything for us this week. Not to mention, again, BGA Live on Wednesday and BGA Live with Repro Productions. All right, now on to our feature. So for this week, Anthony, we've been highlighting this for the last couple of weeks. We are wrapping it up because we're getting on to our number 300 episode. See, I mentioned it again. Bing. So let's, again, talk about a list that is also quite good. Board Game Geek's Top 100 of 2020. We will be going through games 50 all the way to game number one. That's currently on the list for October 2020. If it changes or switches or swap, Board Gamers Anonymous disavows the entire list. But nonetheless,
oh,
here we are.
Well, if that's the case, I think we're already disavowed.
Well, look, the 100 list should always stay the way it is, right?
Yeah, it never changes. I literally got a message 36 hours after we recorded it, within an hour of the episode going up, from a friend here in Pittsburgh who pointed out that two games had swapped places already. And I was like, come on. Board Game Geek, come on. Just lock it down for like a week. Lock it down for a week.
That's what I say. We're going to disavow the list if it switches up. We have no responsibility over that. We should also mention, Anthony, something we haven't mentioned that's been going on for the last month or so is that you may have noticed Board Gamers Anonymous, the podcast, now comes out on Wednesdays.
That's true. Yeah.
Yes, that's also true. I thought people would be more excited, but even can't get Anthony excited about this. So, okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's a thing that's happening. Yeah, and I mean, obviously, sure, we want to have the episode up the same day that we are on BGA Live. So we're going to be referencing the episode. We talk about the stuff that we talk about here. We kind of summarize our question of the week. We dive into some extra information. So it makes sense to have the episode up before we broadcast every Wednesday night. Previously, the episode came out late Thursday, early Friday. And now we just make sure it is up Wednesday morning every week. And you'll definitely have that before BGA Live goes up if you want to check it out.
All right. So, Anthony, with that said, let's finally get on to the feature review.
All right. Yeah, we're going to dive in just straight off. Number 50, Robinson Crusoe, Adventures on the Cursed Island. This is Ignacy Trevicek's now classic. It's only 8 years old, but it feels like a classic cooperative survival game in the world of Robinson Crusoe. There are, I think, 6 or 7 different scenarios out of the box, but then like another 15 or 20 through expansions and promos. Very, very deep game. Very, very difficult in many cases. And one of my favorite co-ops all around. This is a definite buy for me, especially with the new version, which has better rules.
Yeah, I agree with that. I love the card mechanic and the dice mechanic where you can ensure that you'll complete something, but it becomes dangerous. And obviously, as things occur, those cards go back into the deck. So what might seem, you know, an innocent little prick on the finger might actually be something tremendously horrible later on. So, you know, this is a great game. This is really a great game. I don't own this just because, again, as Anthony mentioned, it's a very deep game and it has a lot of rules and complexity to it because it's multiple games in one box. I would like to own this. I don't own this. And honestly, I don't know if I will own this just because I don't think I'll ever be able to get this to the table. That being said, having played this game, it is a buy.
Solo it, man.
It's scary on that island all by myself. I at least need a volleyball with me.
Oh, yeah, that's true. I think there's a volleyball.
Maybe you can go to a volleyball expansion.
Yeah, there might be one, actually.
Oh, is there? Nice.
Yeah. All right, number 49, The Voyages of Marco Polo. This is one of my favorite games of all time. And we actually just did an episode about this about 3-4 weeks ago on BGA Live. So you can hear us talk about it for like 90 minutes if you want to hear everything I think about The Voyages of Marco Polo, the rules, everything that's great about it, some of the things that are kind of wonky, what the expansion does. Fantastic game, like super duper buy. If you find it, buy it.
Yeah, contracts, buy. There's my my review and my overall rating in a nutshell. Yeah, the expansion's a must. Definitely pick up the expansion.
All right, number 48, Alexander Pfister's Maracaibo. This one came out last year, and it is a game in which you kind of just do these loops around the Caribbean and stop at various ports along the way, taking actions, placing out different cards, building a tableau, building an engine that you can do things with. The game could take anywhere from like an hour to 5 hours. It's very much of that Terraforming Mars.
Too long.
So long. It's in that Terraforming Mars bucket of games that should be shorter, but it is not because of the mechanics. I really, really want to love this game. I own it. I've played it a lot. It's still just a play for me. It's so darn long, and it does have some thematic issues. The legacy elements are not as interesting as they could be, although they are fun once you get like 10 games in. So I don't know. It's almost there. It's almost there. I think I like this one a little bit more than you still, though, right?
Yeah, I think in concept, as far as the mechanics are concerned, conceptually, the mechanics are great. Obviously, he utilizes a lot of his other techniques from his other games. This game is just too long. And as you mentioned, Anthony, it's a Terraforming Mars kind of problem where maybe an expansion comes in and literally just pulls some pieces out or speeds the game up. It just overstays its welcome. It's a good game. I've played it multiple times, but I always feel like I could probably play two better games at the same point. So it's generally a dodge for me, even though I recognize the quality of the game. It's just too long. I even played the legacy version of it. It's fine. It's just, I can't. It just takes too long.
I don't think I would play it with more than three people again at all. I play it solo. I love it a lot, but like with just more than two or three, it's just too much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. Number 47, we have from Mind Clash Games, Anachrony. This is like the world's most complicated and thematically wonky worker placement game. And it's a blast. I love this game. It has so many weird, it's just weird. It's a weird game. That's the best way to put it. You are traveling backwards and forwards in time. You're trying to prepare for this like world-ending cataclysm that's going to destroy everything around you, even though there's already been a world-ending cataclysm that you're trying to recover from. It's such a weird game, and it works on so many levels. It's also kind of long. It's also a little overcomplicated, but it just, this one has a special place for me. It's a buy for me.
Yeah, I think this game is interesting on so many levels, as you mentioned, Anthony. Mind Clash always does this thing that reminds me of Jurassic Park, where they could do it, but no one questioned if they should do it. And they did. You know, Mind Clash is like the Nolan films, right? It's overwrought. It's unnecessary at some points. There's huge plot holes, but thematically, somehow it pulls through. It's a play for me. I like this game. I own this game.
All right. Number 46 is Azul. This is the original of all the Azuls. From Kiesling, and it's a classic. It's an instant classic. It is just one of the all-time great abstract games, and there are now, I think, three versions of this, plus multiple expansions for it. I own this. I own the two standalone expansions for this. I play this and the other versions with my family pretty frequently. It is an absolute buy. It's just so much fun. And it can be brutally hard and mean at the same time, which is always a lot of fun in a game like this.
Yeah, I think obviously it's one of those situations where it took a game. And again, it's one of those situations where the production really just carries the game a lot further. And the design and the artwork and everything goes along with it. And it's deceptively simple. But it is such a sleek, fun game that it's hard not to like. I'm not a big abstract fan, and I really like this game, and I bought it, which is weird, but I do like the game a lot.
All right, number 45, Eclipse. This is the first edition of Eclipse. I don't believe the second edition is on this list yet, but it is a big, massive, sprawling Euro about space exploration, research, conquest, diplomacy, all the X's in here. I really wanted to love this game. I love science fiction games. I love 4X. I love Euros. This game is too long. It's too brutal if somebody really gets into your stuff. And it's not nearly as good for me as Twilight Imperium, which we'll talk about later. It's a dodge for me. I really just want to like this, and it just does not work.
Yeah, I think the challenge of this game is, like you mentioned, Twilight Imperium is out there, especially Twilight Imperium 4. Eclipse did get a reprint. It was on Kickstarter. I haven't seen it out there in the world. I don't even know if it's reached its backers yet. Has it? Has it reached its backers yet? Maybe by the time you listen to it?
I think it's floating out into the world as we speak. But yeah, I haven't seen it yet either.
So again, since we're doing this recording on Monday night and it's coming up on Wednesday morning, clearly it's going to come out. Everyone's going to play it before then. So this might be a refined situation. I actually do like Eclipse. I do agree with you, Anthony. It's one of those kind of bloated kind of situation where there's just too many small rules as far as all the things go, as far as this game is concerned. That being said, it's still a play for me.
All right, number 44 on the list, Uwe Rosenberg's Le Havre. In this game, you're building up a supply chain, collecting different resources, building industries and shipping. Really, it's about building these various buildings, producing goods, trading them in for other goods, and just trying to be as efficient as possible as all that. It's pretty difficult to teach. Your first game, you're going to be horrible at it, and it really has a very finite player count in which it plays best with three people. But if you get three people and they've all played before and you can get it done in less than 3 hours, this game is spectacularly good. I do own a copy. I've only played it twice because it is very difficult to get to the table with the right people in the right time frame, but it's a strong, strong play. I want to say buy, but it's so hard to get it to the table at the right time.
Yeah, I think my first game of this, I played with a couple people who've never played before. And I think maybe one or two people that had played it just a few times. It wasn't as ridiculously abusive as I thought it was going to be. But there is certainly some situations where if you don't make the right choices early on, or depending on how many players you have, you might just end up in a situation where you were supposed to sell or you were supposed to buy. And now you're kind of stuck, you know, for the next round or two with no money. So yeah. it can be very painful depending on where you're going in the game. So yeah, it's a light buy for me. I think I would recommend this as a buy.
Alrighty. Number 43 on the list is Through the Ages, A Story of Civilization. We're going to kind of pass over this because later on we get the update, second edition of this game, which I think is what everybody's playing right now. But let's just say the game is good.
I don't understand why this game is actually here, and this is not the only case of an older version still being on the top 100 list. I think if a new version of the same game comes out, and it's basically a reprint with maybe a couple of tweaks, these games should be Hall of Famed. Like, yeah. Hey, you had a high position for a very long time. You created a new version, not a different version, a reprint of the same version. You're out of the list, but you go up to the, you know, the higher echelons. So yeah. I don't know why it's taking up a spot here.
I know so many other good games could be on this list. So speaking of good games, we talked about this one, not too long ago, Clans of Caledonia, number 42. This kind of mixes a few, you know, economic Euro mechanics in with like that Terra Mystica style, like root billy type of player board mechanism. I love this game. I've played it 62 times in the last 15 months. a big part of that is Board Game Arena. I play it pretty constantly on there, and a lot of solo plays as well. But it's just, it's, you know, hands up one of my favorite Euro games. I will openly admit it's not perfectly balanced. It has a lot of balancing issues, but it's just a lot of fun to play.
I play this a lot, surprisingly. It's not a big game for me, but it has hit my table, especially late at night, multiple times. We did play this on BGA Live, so if you'd like to go learn more about the game, we had a bunch of people play it. We did commentary over it, and you can, again, hear a bunch of hours about Clans of Caledonia. You know, it's fine, but there is some serious issues as far as balancing is concerned, especially when it comes down to the clans. So it's going to get the most lightest recommendation. If you've never played it and you would like to play it, I would say play it. But again, it's not going to ever enter my rotation just because some of the clans are broken versus some of the other clans. So unless you house rule it, you're going to have a bad time.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't argue with that. 41, Star Wars Imperial Assault. This one came out literally the week before my daughter was born, because I got this for Christmas. I opened it that morning. She was born that night. And so I always associate this game with the birth of my daughter, because I was like washing and painting the pieces that morning. And then I completely forgot about the game for about 3 weeks after that, because we had a baby who arrived about a week early. And this is like, you take Descent, you reskin it as Star Wars. They released content for this for about 4 years. I have every single expansion that ever came out for this. I have played like 5% of it. So I have to say bye, because the cognitive dissonance will not allow me not to say bye.
I don't own this. I've never played this. I am actually a huge Star Wars fan, especially the whole Empire Strikes Back movie, which does have a lot of content here. I don't know. Again, it seemed like a very large box and a very large investment as far as the other expansions. So I slowly back away when I see it on sale, you know, just in case, because this is definitely one of those lifestyle games that you could enjoy as your main hobby.
Oh, yeah. All right. Number 40, Mechs versus Minions. This is a programming game from the League of Legends universe, but as Chris will, as you'll gladly tell us, has nothing to do with what League of Legends actually is, right?
It has nothing to do with League of Legends actually is. Let's get that out of the way.
I own a copy of this because it was available and I bought it and I played a bit of it. It was fun. I'm not a big programming game kind of person. I've never gone back to it. I'll give it a play because it's a fun game. It's not crazy expensive. The production quality is amazing, but it's fine.
Yeah, I think the what's most notable about this, obviously coming from Riot Games, is they hadn't produced board games. So when they announced a League of Legends game, everyone just blew up. I had played League of Legends since day one. I can tell you everything about the game. And when this came out, I was shocked that this was not pretty much the game that I had played. And I was like, oh, no, I'm not buying this. And then I actually got a chance to play it. And as Anthony mentioned, it's a programming game, which is actually a lot of fun. And it's actually a really good programming game. In fact, most programming games are challenging at best and almost a throwaway, just because it's just the programming is almost, you might as well randomly do things because that's how the game plays out. This actually plays out very smart. It's a good game, great production, still has enough League of Legends content to it that you will enjoy the game. And if you are not a League of Legends fan, you don't have to worry. It doesn't have as much to do with the whole universe, so to speak. So you don't need to know that. For me, it's a play. I don't own a copy of this. I would certainly love to own a copy of this. But again, it's another one of those massive co-op games that is just never going to be able to hit my table.
All right, number 39 on the list, Zolk'in the Mayan Calendar. This is the first official collaboration between Simone Luciani and Daniel Toscini, and it's a brilliant game. It uses this just spectacular wheel mechanism to, you place workers down, they move around each round, and you decide when you want to take them off the board, and then that's the action you take. The base game by itself is somewhat not broken, but borderline solvable. Like, there are certain actions that make more sense to take at certain times. The expansion certainly adds a lot more depth to it. There's some promos that even expand it a little bit more. Obviously, future games build on these mechanisms even more. So it's not my favorite of their joint productions, or even like individual productions from either of them. But I do own the game with the expansion. I do like it quite a bit. It's a strong, strong play from me. Zulkin.
Yeah, Zulkin was one of the big kind of grail games of all time. It came out there. It was huge. And it was super complex. So early on when I was hearing about Euro games, I had played a bunch of them. And I was like, never got that Zulkin game. And like, oh, let me tell you about Zulkin. It's all these moving gears and so intense. And it's a worker displacement game. Oh, no, no, worker displacement game. And you have to feed your people. And it just, the mystery and mystique about this game seemed insane. But it's really kind of worth it. It really is that kind of wondrous, odd, unique mechanic, like literally the wheels move. I mean, it's pretty fantastic. This game is a play for me. I don't own a copy of this game. I would like to own a copy of this game. Again, the only thing that brings it down for a play for me is that there are relatively like three or four winning strategies. And again, when I play a Euro game, I want to have the option of just playing to have fun with it and not have to bring in a strategy for it. But again, it's almost a buy for me. It's quite a good game.
All right, number 38 on the list, Power Grid, Friedman Freeze. This is what many people think of as like the quintessential Euro. But it's also one of the more interactive Euros because you are jockeying for position on the board. You are running auctions every round for the different power stations. There are resources that you can buy out from under other people. It's a relatively mean game if you play it properly, and it is one of my favorites. I love this game. I have it along with like six or seven of the maps. I have expansions for it. I have a deluxe edition. I even have the card game around here somewhere, which is not good, but I have it. So Power Grid is definitely a buy for me.
I would say this is a buy if you can buy something past the initial base game, because I think the American map is a little lopsided as far as, you know, the Eastern Coast, but with the other maps, this game is a buy. And again, it looks like a overly wrought, overly intellectualized math game, but really it's just almost purely kind of a, you know, press your luck bidding game that has some kind of network building to it. So don't let the cover or the game itself kind of brush you away. There is a lot of fun to be found in Power Grid.
All right, number 37 is Everdell. In this game, you are placing your little creatures out, worker placement style, and taking various actions, and then utilizing those actions to build cards in front of you into a tableau, and then activating those to get points and whatnot. Mechanically, it's fairly simple. It's not quite Gateway, but it's in that ballpark. And it's the production that everybody looks at with this thing. You get the big tree, you've got all like the fancy little resources. The expansions add things like pearls and all these extra pieces and stuff. It's a very, very good game. I would even give it a buy. I really enjoy this game quite a bit. I'm a little miffed that's this high on the top 100. I think it's really good. I don't know if it's like top 40 of all time good.
Yeah, I would agree. I don't think it's top 40 of all time. The production is crazy good. Sometimes just crazy. I do love the critters. I do love the construction. I do love how the buildings kind of pair together. The text is a little small and hard to read for most gamers. So that kind of runs into it. That being said, beyond the production and beyond just the elements of the artwork being fantastic, I think the production artwork elevates this game higher than what it would be as far as the play is concerned. But that being said, the play is solid. It's a buy for me. Again, maybe not number 37, but maybe something in the 60s, I think would be a good number for it. It's got a couple expansions out that might rise it higher. I haven't played with all the expansions, only played with one. So yeah, this is definitely a buy.
All right, number 36 on the list, brand new game, just came out a couple months ago, Gloomhaven Jaws of the Lion. This is not really a new game per se. It is Gloomhaven condensed and with a new story, but within a 25 scenario campaign instead of the 109 scenarios in the base game. It's also only $50 instead of $150, and you can buy it like at Walmart and Target. So I have not played this yet. I do have a copy sitting around here somewhere. Gloomhaven is one of my favorite games, but I don't know that I necessarily, I don't know. This is just feels like more Gloomhaven, like
sure,
entry-level Gloomhaven. So I don't know what to think about it.
Yeah, this is Target Gloomhaven, you know, your big box store Gloomhaven. For me, I don't own this game. I haven't played this game. I probably will never play this game. I've played a lot of Gloomhaven as it is. I do feel like, again, I know there's some differences as far as how this game plays out. That being said, I feel like this should almost be packaged with Gloomhaven because it's just more of the same. And again, I don't think this should be number 36, especially since this game just came out. I do think that there's a problem here as far as the ratings are concerned.
Yeah, there was like a whole conversation in the Dice Tower Slack group that we're a member of about whether this should be considered for Game of the Year awards for 2020, because it is new this year, but it's based on a game that came out a few years ago. Yeah. I mean, you'll all find out what happens with that down the line, but it was a very interesting conversation. And like the final verdict was just like, okay, just a little tease for what's coming up in the next few months there. Gotcha. Number 35 is Kingdom Death Monster. This is the mega, mega hit from Kickstarter from 5 years ago. I'm still delivering content somehow. I have a copy because I found one used locally for a song, but this is a $300, $400 game. So that was lucky. I don't think I would ever bought it otherwise. Have not played it, though. It is a beast even just to look at. You got to build everything. You got to glue it. You got to paint it. You got to learn the rules. It's like 50 pages. Have not gotten there.
Yeah, this is another lifestyle game. This is another game that if I did own, which I don't, but if I did own it, I would have to pack up all my other games and get rid of them and just go, this is my life now. And I think, obviously, this is my nightmares because a lot of this stuff is really hardcore for a board game, at least. That being said, I don't own it. I've never played it. I've watched a ton of videos on it. I respect it to the nth degree. I've seen it at conventions. They do such a great job with their boots and the monsters and everything that goes along with this. This is another alternate universe. Maybe I play it there. I don't think I'll ever get a chance to play it in this realm of reality.
All right. Number 34 is Blood Rage. It's is the best Eric Lane game. That's all I'm going to say. It's a buy.
Ooh, that's a big thing out there. But that being said, it probably is.
Yeah.
I own, I think, all this stuff for this. Maybe there's some kind of, yeah, there's probably a couple of things here and there, promo stuff. That being said, it is probably the best example of Eurogame meets Amerithrash. And it's short enough, fast enough, and easily explainable enough that you could play with almost anybody. And the production is great. So, absolute buy.
All right, number 33 is Pandemic Legacy Season 2. We're going to get into some legacy games here, which we've talked about whether they should be on this list or not. I have not played Season 2 at all. I have it somewhere because I meant to play it with the family and just didn't get around to it. But here it is. People like it.
I've never played it. I haven't played Season 1. I haven't played Season 0. I'm not a big Pandemic fan. That being said, I respect it to the nth degree. And yet I got to say, I wonder if this should also not be in its own category because it is a one and done type of game. But if you love it, more power to you.
Yep. Mansions of Madness Second Edition comes in at 32. This is a re-implementation of Mansions of Madness, obviously, using an app to manage the game. A lot of people are not a big fan of the app, but this is one of those games that just did not work. It was fundamentally broken without the app because you make one small mistake and everything falls apart 2 hours into a game. So I had a chance to play this. I actually owned a copy for a bit. It was really good. For an Arkham game, which is not typically my thing, especially the board games, I was really into it. And you have, there's so many different scenarios you can pick up now with all the different expansions and the digital expansions. I couldn't get this to the table. It wasn't for my group. It certainly wasn't for me playing solo, but I super respect this game. If you love Arkham, you love horror games, it's a buy.
Yeah, I've never played this. This is another big game that I think one or two of my game group owns. But again, since it's such a big game and since it's a game night, this is also another game that could clearly be a lifestyle game because there's so much to it. Again, major, massive respect for this game. Haven't played it. Don't know if I ever will. But if you see a copy, let me know.
Number 31 is Root from Leader Games. Cole Worley. This is one of my favorite asymmetrical type of games like this, period. I love this game. I have all the expansions for it. I have two of the plushies up on my shelf that my kids always want to play with. I have some mats lying around here somewhere. I have pins. Like, it's just, they're mascots. It's fun. This is like, this is board gaming in 2020, or I guess in 2019, because 2020 is a nothing. But yeah, Root is fantastic. It's an all-time buy for me and one of my favorite games of all time.
Yeah, I really like this game a lot. I don't own a copy of this. I was supposed to get a copy of this, and then life and everything else happened. Again, the big challenge of this is making sure everyone knows how to play their particular little race of kingdom of little tiny wood meeple people. That being said, it's really great. I played a lot of times. I've had a lot of fun with this game. And, oh man, there's just so much good stuff to say about it. We don't have time. It's a buy.
All right, number 30 is Nemesis. This is the Awakened Realms game that kind of takes everything from the Alien franchise and turns it into a board game. You know, legally distinct, of course. big box and miniatures. My local store just got a copy in recently. It was $150. And I was like, ooh, Nemesis. Ooh, no. I have not played this. I'm not paying $150 for it. But a lot of people really like it a lot. So hopefully someday I get a chance to try it.
Yeah, I think this is a game that I'm never going to see at the table. We did have it at the game group. It was not liked by the Euro gamers, so it was cast out an airlock. So I don't think I'll ever see it because I'm never going to pay that kind of money for it.
No, sir. Number 29 is the Old School Agricola base game, not the revised edition. Not a fan. I have not given this the best rating on here. It's a dodge for me personally, but I'll let you speak to it. This is your kind of game.
It's a buy. Yay. It's Agricola. It's misery farming. It's feeding your people. It's trying to make it through the day. The revised version is obviously even better. Again, they shouldn't have multiple versions here on Board Game Geek. That being said, if you know the cards, or at least you're familiar with the cards, this is probably going to be a great time. That being said, it is a brutal fun time. There is a certain level of just, you know, I'm not going to be able to make it. And I did. And my family didn't starve. And I'm happy about that. So it's the perfect 2020 game.
Yeah, it is. 28 is Food Chain Magnet. I guess that's another good 2020 game. Sure. This game's brutal. It's long. It's complicated. It is incredibly interactive for a Euro. It's actually one of my favorite games all time. It's not my favorite splatter game, but it is fantastic. And you get a chance to pick it up or play it. I highly recommend it. The expansion, while I haven't gotten a chance to play it with other people, certainly seems to add a lot to it.
I love the expansion. I think the expansion really opens this game up because, as Anthony said, you make the wrong first or second turn move, you're going to have a bad time. Going to have a bad time. And again, with the first version of this game, without the expansion, there are certain better paths to victory. So that does become a problem if you're not familiar with that. You almost want to follow what everyone else is doing until you figure out how to go about the game. But it is the most brutal of all brutal Euro games out there.
Yes, sir. Number 27 is the better of the Uwe Rosenberg farming games, Caverna, the Cave Farmers. This is a buy. I love this game.
Yeah, this is a buy. This is a very expensive game. I think recently I saw it come down to like $50-something.
Ooh,
initially, it was like $100 I think it was like $199 game. And this is back in the day where board games were not that expensive. They were about $60 at tops. And this came in at $100. And I'm like, this is crazy. And then I bought it for $90. And yes, I was happy about it. We actually reviewed this way back. I think one of our single digit episodes or so. This is a great game. Again, as Anthony mentioned, it is, if not his best games. In particular, the production's great. All of the cards are now tiles and they're out there on the board, and it's just a lot more flexible. So yeah, absolute buy.
Absolutely. All right. Number 26, The Seventh Continent. This is another one of those big, massive, sprawling Kickstarter games that could never exist without Kickstarter because of the cost of production. I have a copy with the expansion inside. It has like 2,000 cards or something in the box. It's long. It's difficult. You lose a lot. And there's no way you'll ever get through all the continent. And yet there's somehow a second version up on Kickstarter. I still have not played it. So there you go, Seventh Continent.
Yeah, I think there's something about the game that as a game collector, I finally owned up to that. As a game collector, I feel like I should own this game because I think it's so fantastic as far as its mechanics and production goes. That being said, even if I owned it, I probably would never, ever play this again unless I was like literally on a desert island, and then I'm probably going to play Marco Polo or something else that would probably be a lot more helpful. So yeah, this is, I haven't played, I wish I could play, and I probably never will, if that's actually a rating.
Yeah, no, I can say that for a few of these. Yeah. Number 25, Puerto Rico. Haven't played, probably never will. What do you think?
Played it. It was, so again, another one of those kind of like number one games of all time on this list. It's dropped down to number 25. The mechanics are incredibly solid. The theme is a little problematic, to say the least. It's a really solid game. I played it. I like it. I don't know if I would recommend it as a buy because of the problematic themes to it, but if you did want to pick up a copy of this, it's still worth picking up.
All right. Number 24 is Mage Knight board game. This is a game I absolutely love. It's a fantastic game from Vlada Shivatul, and it is dense. It is got systems upon systems. It's difficult to learn. It has a bunch of expansions, but if you break through all those barriers, and if you're only playing with one or two people, do not play this with three or four people. That is insane. You should never do that. But if you're just playing with one or two people, it is one of the best kind of adventure dungeon crawly experiences out there because of the mechanics that are mixed in. So definitely buy.
Yeah, I've never played this. I've always looked up to this game because, again, it was one of those games that was like the top number one solo board game of all time. But I heard about the incredible complexity to this. Solo board gaming is not typically my thing, although I would love to play the Star Trek version of Mage Knight. So again, I don't own it. I've never played it. But, you know, again, as a collector is concerned, it's something that you should definitely look to add to your collection.
Absolutely. Number 23 is Orleans. This is another one of those modern classics, only 6 years old, but everybody knows Orleans. It has five or six expansions now, just like the quintessential bag building game with just a very stark standout art style. A lot of other games have tried this mechanic now, and none of them really quite do it properly. So this game is pretty spot on.
Yeah, Orleans does a great job. Obviously, with its expansion, it really opens up. Otherwise, it only has a couple of paths to victory. But if you haven't played this, you should absolutely play it. And if you have an opportunity to get this with either the minor promo expansions that are extra to the game or one of the big box, it's a buy.
Number 22, A Feast for Odin. I can't believe this game is 4 years old. It's crazy. Time's flying. This is my favorite Uwe Rosenberg game of his like big box Euros. It's not for everybody. But you throw the puzzle laying in there, you throw like the big sprawling sandbox worker placement, you throw all the different little things you can tack on, you add the expansion, which gives you a little more flexibility and like a little bit smarter of a board in terms of how things laid out there. Ah, such a good game. Such a good game. It's definitely a buy for me.
This is a dodge for me. As you mentioned, this game's 4 years old and pretty much I'm still wrapping up my first game of this.
Nah.
The puzzle pieces, the polyominoes are ridiculous. The fiddliness of having items on both sides are really weird. How things kind of like, you know, click in, add up. It's large, it's messy, it's huge. If you love it, more power to you. I respect that, but I'd rather play Caverna.
Yeah, you take Agricola. I'll take this one.
Okay. And we'll split 21. A Caverna on weekends.
That's good. It's good. 21, Viticulture Essential Edition. This is, I don't know, the fourth or fifth iteration of Viticulture when Stonemaier finally just found all the different pieces from the various expansions, boiled them down, and said, this is the stuff you actually want to play.
Yes.
The original game, fine, not great. Tuscany expansion, fantastic, but a lot of stuff, don't need all of it. Slam it all together, weed some other things out, throw in a few card decks, boom, you've got the Essential Edition. And it's considered one of the all-time great worker placement gateway games.
Yes. I think Stegmaier does this better than anybody, which is he re-examines his base games and expansions and goes, all right, I can actually make this better. I think my constant suggestion to a lot of board game designers is if you can, especially if you have a lot of expansions or if it's definitely obtuse or there's way too many cards in the game, is include an expansion that basically takes stuff out of the box and you put it in the expansion box and you throw the expansion box in the garbage. So that's basically what Viticulture Essential Edition does. It takes the best parts, puts in the box, gets rid of the rest. It's a buy.
Number 20 on the list, just from last year, The Phenomenon. that took the board game and just general community by storm, Wingspan. This game won all the awards from like mid last year all the way through this year. I like this game quite a bit. The expansion adds even more to it. The app is really good in Steam. It's not my favorite game in the world overall, just the base game by itself, but I do appreciate what it's doing. I enjoy how accessible it is, and the theme is not just more killing orcs. It's a strong play for me.
Yeah, this is a buy for me, and I play this with a lot of different groups of people. As Anthony mentioned, there it's a wide audience. Obviously, bird lovers ramped up the price, bought this game out. Nobody expected it, except for me, knew this game was going to be great. I said it way back when. This is just a really great game. What's really sets this game apart, if there is anything, is that it is a family, you know, gateway game without ever having to sacrifice being simplistic. So when you play this game, you're building engines up and you really do feel like you're doing something Euro game-ish without ever feeling like you're playing a cheap version of a Euro game. That being said, the base game does have some broken combos. So you could be playing your best game, someone breaks out that broken combo or two, and there's a couple of them in the game, and you're just like, but I'm playing my best game. They're like, oh, that's sad. 1-2, 1-2, 1-2. It's a buy for me.
All right, number 19 on the list, Arkham Horror, the card game. This was the second iteration of the Lord of the Rings card game formula from Nate French in Fantasy Flight Games. And in my opinion, still the best. This is just a fantastic card game that manages to weave in the mechanics that made the original so good with this overarching narrative and this system that allows you to play in multiple different ways. You can play it with up to four people if you're playing multi-co-op. You can play it solo and it runs really well. The decisions you make and the results of the games you play have consequences and carry through to future games. There's content now going back 4 years, so dozens and dozens of packs for this, plus the recharge packs. So like hundreds of hours of gameplay here if you want it. This is one of those games that would take me to the desert island because it's just so much content here. This is definitely a buy.
Yeah, and I think you said it best, Anthony. The story consequences that follow you really set this game apart. I don't know why this wasn't built into all of the LCGs. Maybe it wasn't thought of, but it's so awesome and it's so creepy when you win the game or you lose the game or however you come out of the game and like something's happened now and that's going to stay with you. And it's not just like, oh, you have a -2 for the rest of the game. It's like, oh no, there is consequences, good or bad. There's consequences and there was going to be consequences either way. So it's Arkham Horror. So yeah, it's fine.
Yes, sir. Number 18, Brass Lancashire. This is the original version of Brass. It's been renamed as Lancashire because there are now two versions. We'll get to the other one in a minute. I have not honestly played this more than once in the last few years because they both came in. We played both Lancashire and Birmingham, and we set Lancashire aside and said, this is very good, but this other one is better. And that's been my experience. So I don't want to give Lancashire a buy because if I'm going to pick between the two, I'm going to pick Birmingham. It's a very good game. It's a classic. I love it. I don't play it. So Brass Lancashire is a play for me. I still own my copy. I'm going to keep it, but there's a better version.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think you could easily argue that there is a better version. So why would you be buying this? That being said, if this does come to your table, it's absolutely worth the play. If you did have an opportunity to pick it up, you know, on sale or something, pick it up because it's good as a collector's edition to have, but you're going to want to play Birmingham.
Yeah. All right. Number 17. I'm going to let you speak to this one because I've only played it 3 times in the last 3 years. Concordia. It's a play for me. I like it a lot, but you've played this way more than me.
Yeah. Concordia is the game that I've probably played more than any other game, honestly. And that's saying a lot. That being said, I don't own a copy of it because every game group I go always wants to play Concordia. I've played all the maps. I played all the versions of it. It's a great game. It's one of my highest rated games. And especially it's weirdly a game I don't own. So at some point, if this ever comes on massive sale, I'll pick it up just to have it in my collection. But it probably always stayed sealed because, again, it always hits the table. It is really the quintessential, you know, trading in the Mediterranean type of game.
Number 16, Seven Wonders Duel. Here's another one we did an episode on very recently. So just hit up twitch.tv, Board Game Arena, and watch us talk about Seven Wonders Duel for an hour and a half. This game is spectacular. It's one of my favorite two-player games. It's an absolute buy. That is all there is to be said.
Yeah, ditto to all that. There's, I don't know what else you could say about it other than it being great and other than we played it on BGA Live. I love the expansions. Anthony, not so much. So, you know, try them out. See if you like them.
Yep. All right. Next up on the list at number 15 is Terra Mystica. This one came out like right as we were getting into board games, actually, like, or at least hobby board games at Myriad Games starting the podcast. That was my first play of this. I absolutely love this. This was like my first big heavy Euro. There have been multiple games since then that kind of have similar mechanics, including the sequel to this game that I like better. But I still have this game. I have the Merchants of the Seas. I have the Fire and Ice expansion. I plan on buying the other expansion if they ever release it with the modular boards. It's still a very good game. It just doesn't hit the table very often. And it's kind of in that Brass Lancashire conversation where if you're going to choose between Gaia Project and Terra Mystica, you should buy Gaia Project. Unless theme really matters. But if theme doesn't matter, buy Gaia Project. It's the better game.
Yeah, I'm going to go along with the same thing with Brass Lancashire, that this is such a great game that you should add it to your collection. So buy it if you can get it on sale. That being said, play it. That being said, for me, more or less, it's a light play to maybe a light dodge just because it is a little cumbersome. There are better versions out there of this. So I'm going to typically pass on this.
All right, number 14, the all-time best-selling, at least, Stefan Feld game, The Castles of Burgundy. I own two copies of this because I have the original with a few of the expansions, and then I have the new anniversary edition with all of the expansions because it comes with that. And I've played this game many, 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 many times. It's the easiest Stefan Feld game to get played, and as one of my favorite designers, that's important to me. It's not my favorite of his games, but it's very solid, very accessible, not quite as sprawling in terms of point salady as some of his other games. So it's definitely a buy.
Yeah, I would go along what you're saying there as far as all the different possibilities are concerned. Yeah, I think The Castles of Burgundy does so many things right. It's very much like a lot of great old films that are out there, but have been improved so much in other versions of this game that, again, buy it because it's a classic, buy it because it does things right. That being said, there are better games out there. I own it. I recommend it owning it too.
Number 13, Spirit Island. This is the best cooperative game ever. For Euro gamers, at least, it's an easy buy. It's just a spectacular, fantastic game. I love Spirit Island.
Yeah, Spirit Island does a lot of things right. And again, it's one of those situations where it could have easily gone off a cliff because there's so many different things happening at the same time. The expansions really make this game a lot better. I would highly recommend it. Otherwise, the game ends abruptly. Some of the spirits are a little harder than others. You really want to match things up. It's definitely one of those situations where you want to have a quiet game night so you can all talk at the table. One, again, one of the best co-op games of all time. Absolutely agree with Anthony. It's a buy.
Number 12, War of the Rings, second edition. This is my favorite game of all time. It's been number one for a few years. Just an epic cinematic experience. You don't even need to throw in the expansions, although they certainly elevate the game even further. But this is one of my few perfect tens. Period. I think I have two, maybe three. And one of those might be Pandemic Legacy. So I don't know if that counts anymore. It's just a spectacular, amazing experience. I highly, highly recommend you play this at least once in your life. And if you are a Lord of the Rings fan, you should own a copy.
I agree with everything Anthony says. One of my favorite games of all time, up there in the top tens.
Number 11 is Scythe. I own a copy, actually own the Art Connoisseur edition from the original Kickstarter, backer number 3. And all the expansions, plus Fenris, which I still haven't gotten around to playing. And I got to be honest, this game's kind of gone cold for me over the years. I've played it several times, at least 2-3 times a year. And the last few times I've played it just has not stuck with me. I've been like borderline of getting rid of my copy for a little while now, just because I don't have the urge to play it. So this one's a play possibly bordering on a dodge at this point.
This game is a buy. I can't remember where it was on my top 100 list last time we did this, but it was very high. I think it might have even been in the top five. The Rise of Fenris expansion makes this a complete game. We already talked about Stegmeier's games with Viticulture, that he brings out this concept. He brings out the expansions. They're all kind of out there. They're not really fitting well together. Rise of Fenris makes Scythe a complete game. It makes the game fundamentally better for so many different reasons I can't go into right now. That makes it a buy. Definitely play the base game. Go, huh, that was cool. Awesome artwork. Love it. Then jump right to the Rise of Fenris and you'll have a complete awesome experience.
All right. Number 10 on the list is The Great Western Trail from Alexander Pfister. This game's okay. I mean, I like it. I own it somewhere, but I think it's in my trade pile. Just because, and it's not even like there's nothing wrong with it per se, but if you play it enough times, and I've played it maybe half a dozen times, it starts to feel kind of samey. It starts to feel like certain moves make more sense to start. The expansion doesn't resolve a lot of those issues. It just makes the game really long, which I don't know that I necessarily enjoy. I would sit down and play it if someone put it in front of me, but I don't think I would go back and buy this a second time. We've said this before. I'm always a little miffed that this game managed to move up so high on the list. I know a lot of people really love it. I just don't get it. And that's just a personal thing. But Great Western Trail is like a light play for me.
It's a light dodge for me. Again, it's one of those games that in concept works out very well. The mechanics are pretty great. That being said, it's ultimately breakable. I've played this game so many times. I've never lost at this game, and I don't know why that is. I know, again, that there are just paths. There are certain ways to play this game that are just not going to be beneficial for the average player. The expansion makes the game longer for no particular reason. In general, it's a decent game. I don't know why it's here at number 10. I can't complain about it, but I do know that there are problems with it.
Number 9 is Twilight Struggle. I have still only played this game one time, 6.5 years ago. It was a long, brutal experience, so I never went back to it. Played online a couple times since then. I do have the new Imperial Struggle, which I know is not exactly the same as this, but I'm more interested in that. So I'm not going to give it a rating or anything, but it's a game where I just haven't had the urge to go back to it due to the length and the complexity. And I know it's like one of those games that everybody just salivates over, but it's just not for me.
Yeah, I've never played this. I don't know how this has happened. I've seen it at the game table once or twice. It's a two-player game. I've heard the lore, the history. I own it on Steam. Just never got a chance to play it yet.
Number 8, Gaia Project. This is the sci-fi version of Terra Mystica that honestly fixes a lot of the issues that Terra Mystica has, if you feel like it has any issues. Like, it makes the board modular. It adds a lot of new mechanics. It kind of fixes the temple track problem by building out this tech tree that you build up over time. This is a spectacular game. It has a really solid solo version. They've yet to release any expansions for anything. I don't necessarily think it needs them because it doesn't really have the imbalance issues that Terra Mystica had out of the box. This is a buy for me.
Yeah, this is a play for me. I like this better than Terra Mystica, although I do like the theming and the artwork better in Terra Mystica. Again, as you mentioned, mechanically, this is a lot better. It fixes a lot of problems with the other game. It just does not carry on the artwork and the design from Terra Mystica. So it's a little bit of a bummer. Maybe if they could put both of those together, it would be a buy. But for right now, it's just an ever so slightly dodged game.
Number 7 is Star Wars Rebellion. This is kind of, if you took the idea behind War of the Ring and did it with Star Wars, where one player plays the Imperials, one player plays the Rebels, and you have the whole toy box of Star Wars in front of you to play out the trilogy, the original trilogy only, because the good stuff, right?
Yes.
Spectacular asymmetrical two-player game, really clever card play. I still like War of the Ring better, and I'll put that higher, but that doesn't diminish what I think of Rebellion. It's still a solid buy for me.
Yeah, this is a solid buy. Again, it's another one of those games that it transcends its IP. So if you're not a huge Star Wars fan and you're wondering if you should play Star Wars Rebellion, you should absolutely play Star Wars Rebellion. You don't need to know anything about the game. It plays great. It could have almost any other theme on it. But again, it's just fantastic. Just happens to be a two-player game, but an absolute buy.
Yep, and definitely pick up the expansion for that too.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Number 6 is Through the Ages, A New Story of Civilization. So we mentioned this way back when it was the normal story of Civilization. This is the new story of Civilization. This is basically the second edition of the game. It's been updated. It's been tweaked. The rules have been revised. This is also the version you'll play if you play the app, which is, for my money, the best board game app out there. Just in terms of gameplay, in terms of writing, in terms of presentation, just very, very solid. Spectacularly fun game. It kind of falls in that category of games like I would never want to play this with four people at the table because it would probably take 6 hours. But sitting down and playing with like two people, playing it solo, playing it online, just so much fun. It really feels like a Civilization game in ways that other ones don't always feel like.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to piggyback on what everything Anthony said. It's absolutely a buy. I will say one thing. It does take a long time if you're playing with multiple people. The app is, of course, the best board game app out there. That being said, if you play with three or four players, you can gain agreements with other players that you don't get with a two-player game. So that would be the only difference on that. But again, it's a buy all the way through.
Number five, Twilight Imperium 4th Edition. This is not my number one game of all time, but it's probably my favorite gaming experiences of all time. I've played this game 5 times now since it came out 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I have not played it in the last year because, you know, reasons. Virus reasons. And every single play has been memorable. It has been an all-day experience. It has been like building friendships, ruining other friendships, rebuilding those friendships that were just ruined. It's just such an amazing experience of a game. So much goes into this. You're trading things, you're conquesting, you're building, you're maneuvering, you're manipulating. And at the end of the day, only one person is going to win that game. And everybody else is going to be like, we were so close because the scores aren't that big. I just love playing this so much. It makes me sad that they're releasing an expansion for this in the middle of a pandemic when I know I can't play it for months.
Yeah, this game surprised me. You know, it was always funny when I started getting into board gaming. I was an Amerithrash guy and then became a Euro guy and then even became a Splatter guy in some respects and just got dragged over to a Twilight Imperium game. And I was like, clearly I'm not going to enjoy this. And I'm like, oh no, this is beyond. I mean, I think there's a couple of games on this top 100 that definitely go above and beyond, and this is definitely one of those. So again, don't be put off by anything about this game. If somehow it rubs you the wrong way, you do want to sit down and play this game. It's an absolute buy.
Absolutely. Yes. Number four is Terraforming Mars. This is the breakout hit from 2016 that Chris, you in particular, knocked your way through the crowd to make sure we got copies of right out of the gate.
It's true.
It has not great artwork, pretty bad components. The box falls apart a little bit. The game's a little wonky and a little broken, but it's still one of my favorite games of all time just because so many combinations, so many different ways to approach it. It has one of the best solo games in any Euro period. I've played that like 50 times by itself. The app's not amazing, but it's gotten better over the years. And there's other games that have now taken this formula and done it a little bit better. But Terraforming Mars, it's still such a solid game. And I always find myself coming back to it. And with the right combination of expansions, because some of them are duds, but some of them are very good, the game does get better.
Oh, absolutely. I think it's definitely one of those challenging games that it almost feels like a Kickstarter game. Like some of the components are not complete. Some of the elements, the mechanics are incomplete. Somehow the game rises above it. It's a fantastic game. I don't know why it's number four here, but I kind of get it. I've had probably as close to the number of plays on Terraforming Mars as I had Concordia. That being said, it just has too much. It's just a little too bloated at this point. It definitely needs a Stegmaier version where everything's slimmed down to the best of the best. So that's why it doesn't rise to me for number four, but it's definitely still a buy.
Absolutely. Yep. Number three, Brass Birmingham. We talked about this before. This is the updated version of Brass, which it introduces a few new mechanics. It changes the map a little bit. It adds beer as a resource that you need to deliver a lot of the goods that you're going to sell. It tightens the game up in several ways. It loosens it up in some other ways. In my opinion, it is significantly better. Lancashire is still a fantastic game, but this one elevates it up and is the reason that it manages to get up here to like the number three spot. It's an absolute buy. It's fantastic. And if you're going to play Brass, in my opinion, you should start with Birmingham.
Absolutely. The best version of this it opens the games up. There's some variability that you don't get in the initial games. There's more ways to score points. It's not such a rail system. It's an absolute buy.
All right, number two on the list, Pandemic Legacy Season 1. We talked about this before. Does the Legacy format, which you can only play once, and you're, let's be honest, you're only going to play it once, does it deserve to be on here? Now, when you play these Legacy games, you play them like 10 to 15 times, which is, based on the number of plays I have of most of these games, is comparable to how often you're going to play it. But you're going to do that in a compressed time period, and you're probably not going to come back to it. So it's an amazing experience, but is it the best game, right? Or is it the best experience? So I struggle with this a little bit. Like, I gave Pandemic Legacy Season 1 a 10 because it was such an amazing experience for me and my wife. But it's not in my top 10 board games of all time. And I'm like, we're still working on our top 100 list, and I'm struggling whether to put it on that list at all, because I'm like, I'm never going to play this again. And it's been 5 years now since I played it. Sure. So it's tough to keep saying this is like a top 100 game when I haven't played it in a very long time. So that does make it difficult.
Yeah, I've never played this one. As I mentioned earlier, I have the highest respects. It's one of the very few Legacy games that actually work. That being said, I'm never going to play this. It's a one and done type of situation. I do feel like this deserves to be in its own category with like the Hall of Fame games, that it reached a certain high point. And since it's a one and done, it's kind of hard to see that this would be a board game that would just, like, you have one great experience. I've had a lot of one great experiences with games, and then I've played them multiple times. Oftentimes we're like, hey, have you played that game multiple times? Yeah. What do you think about it? Well, on average, I think it's this. Right. So even though you're playing multiple versions of it, it is still a one and done type of situation. You either love it or you hate it. And that's really why it's this high up.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. So that brings us to number one of all time. It has not changed in a little while. It is Gloomhaven, of course. You haven't heard it yet, so you knew it was here. This is not a pure Legacy game. They call it Legacy-ish, but it's really not. It has elements in which you are building up and making your character stronger. You have experience and they get new abilities. And then they retire and you get new characters. And there's stickers you might place on the map and things that kind of live throughout the game. I know the sequel to this, Frosthaven, which was on Kickstarter earlier this year, kind of leans into that a little bit more. But at the end of the day, it's a dungeon crawl. It's like any of the other dungeon crawl games, just with a little bit more refined and Euro-style mechanics. And there is dozens and dozens of scenarios. So if you really like the game, you can play this forever. There's 100-plus scenarios in the base game. Another, I think, 20 or 30 in the expansion. There's a bonus thing you could have gotten from one of the Kickstarters, which I think you could still get with like 10 more, plus Jaws of the Lion's another 25, and then Frosthaven's like another 100. So if you really like the Haven formula, there's like 250 plus scenarios you can play. And that is let's be honest, that's a reason why a lot of people rank this so highly. I love it. It's still one of my favorite games. I give it a very high rating, but it's an interesting case as well of, if you get to 80 plays, it's a little samey, right?
Yeah, I think I've played enough of this. I think I have something along the lines of about 40, 50 plays of this. That being said, I haven't played the full game out, so I don't know if I should be giving a full review about this, but I played about 45, 46 games of this. It's a dodge for me. Again, it deserves to be part of your collection because it's just, you know, an anomaly. It's just, it should not exist. And it was the first game like that that should not exist. And if it wasn't for Kickstarter, it probably would not exist. That being said, it's a lot of the same. It's a lot of hack and slash. It's a lot of your worst nightmare is becoming exhausted because it took too far to get to the guys you needed to defeat. So it just doesn't do enough different things for me. Now, Frosthaven's supposed to be doing some different things. So if you love this, you should absolutely buy it. If you don't own this, don't jump in knee deep. You should absolutely try it at the table with somebody else. But for me, I've played this game so much and I keep waiting for it to be something different. And it has a lot of great elements to it that I'm in awe about. The whole switching the different characters is fantastic. But again, it just doesn't do enough different things for me. And it's just such a time sink. So yeah, it's still going to be a dodge for me.
Yeah, that's fair. I think a lot of people have kind of come around to that. Obviously, not too many. It's still number one on here. But I still consider it a buy, but it's a tough buy. It's expensive. I would say if you're going to buy this, start with Jaws of the Lion, unless you've already played this and you want to try it. But that's $50. Much easier entry point. Same basic formula. A very good campaign by all accounts. So there are like layers and levels in which you can enter this world now without having to spend $150 on the base game.
I absolutely agree. All right, so there you go. Board Game Geek's top 100 list for 2020. Hopefully you enjoyed this long walk down 100 games, and hopefully our 100 lists will be just as fascinating for you, just as exciting, and just as controversial, in fact, especially when we get to our number one games of all time. So thank you for joining us. Look forward to seeing you on BGA Live this week, Wednesday and Thursday. All right, Anthony, until next time, this is Chris.
And this is Anthony.
And we'll save you all a seat at the table.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early, so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.